Cyborg.
This is a rebellion, isn't it?
I call it aggressive negotiations.
The garbage will do!
Hi, welcome to the very first episode of the Trash Compactor podcast, where we'll be talking about all things Star Wars from a fangirl perspective. I'm Roan, and I'm here with...
MC.
And we'll be your hosts. For our first episode, we figured it really only made sense to devote time to our very first Star Wars heroine that we all came to know and love, Leia Organa. So over the next hour or so, we'll be discussing Claudia Gray's Bloodline, the Leia-centric EU book that just came out this past month, and we've all read it and are super excited about it. We'll have some recs for some Leia-centric fan works. And in addition, every episode that we do will have some of the latest Star Wars news and a short spotlight on a female Star Wars character. So we're finally getting around to doing this.
Been a long time coming, I think. I've been wanting to talk about Star Wars basically since I was born, and actually get to talk about it on a podcast is awesome.
I'm a little bit older than MC, so I haven't been talking about Star Wars since I was born, but I was 5 years old when A New Hope came out and have been in love with it ever since. So we started talking and realized that we didn't know of any kind of female-centric and female-focused Star Wars podcasts, so we thought we'd jump in and do it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Star Wars podcasts, and there's a lot of really great ones out there, but they did seem to be more, you know, phallocentric, let's say.
Not that we're not going to get into phallocentric stuff at some point, I'm sure, yeah. Because we're fangirls. And, yeah. You know, I like me some Slash as much as the next fangirl, so I imagine that will come up eventually, but later we want to get to the ladies first.
The way women experience fandom is very different from the way men experience fandom. And I think Star Wars is one of these fandoms that has had quite a big shift in it. While there's always been women who are interested in Star Wars, it's only been, I think, with the prequels and especially The Force Awakens that women have felt that they've been able to really experience the fandom. They've been able to find their own niche. Maybe I'm just looking at things from, you know, a younger perspective.
But. Well, I mean, the internet certainly made fandom easier for everybody to get into. I know one of the things that I would love to have us talk about at some point, I want to track down some of these women who are writing these zines, you know, back in the 70s and the 80s and, you know, passing them around under Lucasfilm's radar.
Oh, yeah. Lucasfilms hated those.
So, yeah, I mean, we've been around. It's just, I think with the internet and, yeah, like you said, with the prequels, it really kind of exploded. So guess what, guys? We're here to stay and we're going to keep writing fic about all your faves. At least I am.
Especially as we keep getting these movies with these kick-ass heroines in them. I mean, Leia was awesome, and we're going to be talking about how awesome Leia was, especially in this episode. But, you know, we've got Rey, and we've got Jyn Erso coming up.
So excited about Jyn Erso. Yeah, and, you know, and Padme. We can't forget Padme.
Padme.
She kind of gets short shrift, I think.
That's true, yeah.
Because, I mean, let's face it, Revenge of the Sith kind of relegated her to being pregnant and sad, but damn it, we're taking her back.
Yeah, no, we're definitely going to have to do some discussions on Padme and just the prequels in general, because I have some strong feelings on the prequels, both bad and good. But I think I'm actually a bit more generous towards the prequels than a lot of people.
I have gotten more generous, honestly. Watching the Clone Wars really kind of refocused me on the prequels and made me appreciate them a lot more, I think.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Obviously, some of the things we're going to focus on are the female characters, like we said. I really want to focus on the transformative aspects of fandom. That's kind of where I live. You know, I write fic, I read meta, I'm on Tumblr, and I love that side of the fandom. I just love the energy and the way everyone just gets excited and makes things And so we'll definitely be talking about that in addition to all the canon stuff.
Star Wars has always been a really great fandom for people being very creative. I mean, and just look at like the costumes you get, you know, just coming to conventions. Fan fiction's, of course, been around forever. Fan art, there's just so many different avenues that can actually, that can really be explored.
Fan vids, obviously. You and I both do those. So we have a lot of material to cover, basically. So yes, hopefully we'll be able to do this for a while. I'm assuming that anyone who's listening to this is familiar with fandom culture, you know, at least like women-focused fandom culture. So they probably get the Trash Compactor reference.
I would hope so.
But just in case, I am not, I've resisted calling myself trash.
I think being like a trash is, I mean, there's certain, there's being a fan and there's being trash, and being trash is just like, oh, I just don't even care anymore. I am just like into whatever. I don't care if I like Luke and Leia kissing. I wonder who that could be.
Golly.
And I mean, I've especially become a lot more comfortable with the term as I've gotten more friends who have been into the idea of Reylo.
We'll be talking about that, I'm sure.
We'll talk about that. But yeah, a lot of them will call themselves, you know, Reylo trash. And I'm like, okay, do you know what? This is an okay term to use. Like, I mean, it's not really pejorative. It's
now, see, I really resist calling myself Luke and Leia trash because, damn it, I didn't know when I started shipping them, okay? Nobody knew. It was the 80s. We were all very young and naive.
Splinter of the mind's eye.
Yeah, that's really all you need to say. We really had a hard time coming up with a name for this.
Yeah, we did. We had so many things we were going through. We wanted to have something that was evocative of female characters in the Star Wars universe. But then we realized that
there weren't a lot.
Yeah.
We were looking at things like maybe the Night Sisters. Oh, the Handmaidens of Naboo. We were thinking about that.
My mother still stands by. She thinks we should have been called Naboobies.
I love that your mother is a Star Wars fan. That's, I'm never getting over that. That's awesome. We are multi-generational.
But yeah, there was really no, there was nothing that we could find that wasn't specific to one character, because we didn't want something that was just like, oh, this is just for Leia, or this is just for Padme. And the Night Sisters kind of had negative connotations.
Yeah, well, I mean, because I have nothing against the dark side, but, you know, it's not like my prime identifier or anything.
Yeah, same here.
I'm still trying to remember some of the names we came up with. We were scrounging.
Yeah, we really were. It just goes to show you how much a podcast like this is needed, that the Star Wars fandom isn't really tailored to women.
But it's changing!
It is changing, yay! And this is why we need to be a part of the change. And I think, like, Star Wars fandom with Kathleen Kennedy, you know, heading things up is definitely making things more female-centric. Like, oh, we thought about calling ourselves the Knights of Rey.
That, yes, we did. We did.
Yeah, and that was a very serious contender for a while, but I think it was the whole idea of we didn't want to set ourselves just to the sequels.
Right, and so it was perfect when it was actually Songlin who heard that we were doing a podcast and said, oh my god, you have to call it the Trash Compactor.
And kind of as soon as we all heard that, it's like, yeah.
Yep, that's it.
Perfect, that's it. I mean, I think the fact that, I mean, maybe it's not female related, but it's not male related. It's not like we're calling ourselves Luke Skywalker's whores.
I am not going to comment on that. Except that I'm blushing. Holy shit. Well, I mean, in a way, Trash Compactor kind of is, because it is really primarily the transformative female-focused fandom that we refer to ourselves as trash. So it's one of those things that if you get it, you get it, and if you don't, you're kind of confused.
And also, it let me draw Dianaga.
Yes, I should mention that all of the artwork for our podcast, our logo, all of our great banners, MC is our resident artist, and she's amazing. But yeah, I know we've been talking to several people about coming in and joining us on discussions and doing interviews. So if you know of anybody that you think we should talk to, give us a yell. We have a Tumblr, which is just trashcompactorpodcast.tumblr.com. We also obviously have a website, which is also trashcompactorpodcast.com. We do have a Twitter account. Our Twitter account is SWTrashPodcast. So follow us wherever, send us messages wherever, something you want to hear, someone you think we should talk to, and we will try to do that. For now, I think we might be ready to start the episode.
I think we are too. So do we want to get into the news? This is MC, and this is what's happening in the galaxy. After a lengthy search, Alden Ehrenreich has been cast as young Han Solo in the 2018 anthology prequel. The 26-year-old has 19 credits, including the Coen brothers' Hail Caesar and Woody Allen's Blue Jasmine. Han Solo, A Star Wars Story is being written by Lawrence and John Kasdan. Lawrence Kasdan previously co-wrote The Empire Strikes Back, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Return of the Jedi, and The Force Awakens. This will be John Kasdan's debut in the Star Wars universe, having previously written for Freaks and Geeks and Dawson's Creek. It will be directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, the men behind The Lego Movie and 21 and 22 Jump Street. Episode 8 has just finished Irish filming. On May 31st, Lucasfilm took out an advertisement in the Irish Examiner, thanking the people of Crookhaven, Goleen, and the Browhead Peninsula. Mark Hamill, Daisy Ridley, and Adam Driver were seen arriving in Ireland in mid-May. Ireland was used in The Force Awakens as Ahch-To, the location of the first Jedi Temple and Luke's hiding spot. Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, will be undergoing reshoots. However, the rumors that it is because of failed test screenings are untrue, as no test screenings have been done for the film. Reportedly, the reshoots are to lighten the tone of the grim movie, bringing it more in line with previous installments. Images were leaked from Rogue One's official visual story guide, revealing names and descriptions of main characters, as well as ship designs. Due to our spoiler and rumor policy, we won't be discussing them here, but we will provide a link in the notes. Disney has asked for the removal of the images, saying the information isn't correct. They have also canceled a tie-in comic for October. Disney and Netflix have struck a deal for the streaming service to become the exclusive home to Disney's catalog this September. This includes films from Pixar, Marvel, and Lucasfilms. This deal only affects future installments, starting with Rogue One. Starz currently holds the exclusive rights to The Force Awakens in the United States. Finally, on May the 4th, J.J. Abrams joined Lin-Manuel Miranda for the Ham for Ham show outside the Richard Rogers Theater for fans waiting for Hamilton lottery tickets. They performed Jabba Flow, the song Miranda wrote for The Force Awakens cantina scene under the name Shag Kava. The same day, the song appeared on the iTunes store for 99 cents. That's all for the Trash Compactor news. If you have any tips, email us at thetrashcompactorpodcast@gmail.com. Despite appearing in only one scene in the original trilogy, Mon Mothma is a character that has deeply affected the political landscape of the galaxy in every continuity since the Clone Wars until long after the end of the Rebellion. Born on Chandrilla, Mon Mothma became the senatorial representative of her home planet during the Clone Wars. Growing concerned over Palpatine's growing power, she worked with Padme Amidala and Bail Organa to begin the Rebel Alliance. She served as mentor to Leia Organa while she worked with Bail to oppose the Empire. After the destruction of Alderaan, she found herself in the political lead of the rebellion, and she would see them to victory over both Death Stars. At the fall of the Empire, Mon Mothma became head of the New Republic in both the canon and Legends continuities. In Legends, she would retire and hand the reins over to Leia Organa Solo, seeing the galaxy finally at peace when she passed away in her sleep. In canon, Mon Mothma's retirement due to illness brought lack of guidance, political confusion, and directly led to the rise of the First Order.
Welcome to our very first roundtable here at the Trash Compactor Podcast, where we're going to be talking about Leia Organa, and we're also going to be talking about Claudia Gray's Bloodline, which just came out in early May. I'm Roan, and with me today I have...
I'm MC.
I'm April.
We have all read Bloodline, I think, a couple of times at this point, and are really excited about it. Since the book hasn't been out for very long, we know not everybody's had a chance to read it yet. So we're kind of going to focus the first part of our discussion on some non-spoilery aspects of the book. I almost said of the fic.
well, I mean, come on. It's paid fic. Yeah.
Of the book and about Leia herself. And then, you know, we'll kind of give a spoiler warning so anyone who doesn't want to listen to spoilers can skip ahead or hop out or whatever so you don't get spoiled for the book in advance of reading it. So I guess, first of all, how excited were you guys to get this book?
So excited.
Yeah, I was so glad that books come out on Tuesdays and that it would ship right to my door because I'm always off on Tuesdays. And I just planned. That was my day. I was just like, I'm going to read Bloodline. And I pre-ordered it, I think, in February. Like the beginning of February.
Yeah, I pre-ordered it really early as well. And I get everything on my Kindle. So I was literally camping my email box on Monday night at midnight, like waiting for the email to come from Amazon that said, hey, it's been delivered. And it got there like 10 minutes after midnight. I immediately started reading.
This was the first book that they said, this is going to have like stuff from The Force Awakens. Like it's going to build things up towards that. You know, it's only a couple of years before and we had absolutely no idea. It's like, okay, so it's 5 years before. So where's everybody going to be? And, you know, it's focused on Leia, who is, of course, like one of my favorite characters. And as somebody who's read like a lot of the expanded universe, the original Legends books, Leia was actually kind of got the short end of the stick in terms of those stories. They had her in like this very strong role in that she was for a while the head of the galaxy. But I guess they couldn't figure out a way to write politics well. So she was in the background a lot while, you know, Han was doing his roguish thing. And Luke, of course, you know, was like running his academy and he got a lot of play. But Leia just kind of happened to be there. I mean, even in the book that had her name in the title, The Courtship of Princess Leia, I wouldn't call Leia the main character. Yeah.
No, she really wasn't, sadly.
Yeah,
that one I've read.
That was a huge thing I was excited about, that it was a book about Leia and that it was written by a woman. Like, that was a huge thing for me.
Yes, and oh my gosh, we have to talk about Claudia Gray, because I don't know if you guys have read Lost Stars, her other Star Wars book.
I haven't.
No.
I was reading about it the other day, and I was like, I have to read this. I had no idea that it was literally about star-crossed lovers. Like,
it is.
It's like, okay, now I'm totally down.
It's a young adult book, and it is so fantastic. I mean, yes, it is about star-crossed lovers. You know, like, two kids who grow up, they go to the Imperial Academy together, and they both end up joining the Empire together, and then one of them splits and goes to the Rebellion. And, I mean, it follows them through the entire trilogy, but it's just fantastic. When I heard that she was writing Bloodline, I was like, oh my god, yes, because she writes women so well.
Yeah.
I was just psyched.
I'm slowly going to read all of the new canon. I've got most of it. It's just kind of a matter of finding the time to sit down and read it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was such a fan of the Legends universe that the fact that there's, like, I mean, I know a lot of people have complained about the fact that they've gotten rid of, well, I mean, they haven't even gotten rid of the Legends universe, but they're ignoring that in favor of writing new stuff.
Right.
But it's like, you could still read that. Yeah. You've just got an entirely new, like, timeline that you can read. I like, they had honestly kind of reached the end of what they could have done with the Legends universe, because I think they had gone up to, like, 50 years after, like, the Battle of Yavin, so.
Well, and then everybody would know what's going to happen, too.
Exactly.
And it just gives more continuity. And you can always just pretend the other is an alternate timeline. That's not.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think for some of us, it's easier to accept that just because it's like fanfic. Like, okay, so it's not canon. So what? It doesn't mean it's still not something we want to read just because it maybe didn't actually happen in the official universe now.
I think one of the great things about this resurgence in Star Wars media is that Princess Leia is getting so much more attention than she did in the past.
Yay!
I mean, she was always an important character. She was part of the trio of characters, but she was kind of, she was treated like Wonder Woman in terms of like DC's trio. It's like all of the attention on Superman and Batman while she just happens to be there.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I really, really loved best about Bloodline, and please, nobody get me wrong and send me hate mail, because honestly, I swear to God, I have loved Luke Skywalker since I was 5 years old. I still do. He's like my ideal man and probably why I'm still single. But as much as and Return of the Jedi is honestly my favorite of the Star Wars movies, mostly for that reason.
That's going to be the thing you get hate on.
Well, whatever. I love it. Okay, let me put it this way. I recognize that Empire is the superior movie of the three, but my heart belongs to Return of the Jedi. I just can't help it. But anyway, I love that finally in Bloodline, we get Leia's take on her family discovery. I mean, because we don't see any of that in Jedi.
Right.
We see Luke, you know, walking Vader through his redemption and having that great moment where, you know, they're crying on each other and it's lovely and it's beautiful. And Leia just gets like, oh, and by the way.
Yeah.
Guess who your dad is.
Yeah.
And that's all we see.
And her ambivalence, I think, about everything was a great thing to see her working through that. And yeah, it was pretty interesting. I was so glad to get that point of view. Another thing that, I mean, this literally made me cry is whenever it was revealed that Leia knows who Padme was. I just started to weep. And I actually went and called upstairs to my daughter and told her because I was so happy.
That was the biggest question I had going into it. I mean, obviously, anyone who has read the synopsis or read anything about this book at all, you already know that the big driving point is, you know, it comes out that Darth Vader was Luke and Leia's father. But there was always that question of, do they find out about Padme, or is she just forgotten in the history of the trilogy?
Yeah.
I have to say that is actually, as much as I love this book, and I really do, I actually, it's like I said, I've read a lot of the Star Wars books. So this has to be my favorite out of all of the Star Wars books I've read. But the story I still want to read is I want to read about how Luke and Leia find out about Padme. Like, I don't want it to just be that Ben's ghost shows up and be like, oh, by the way, here's, like, the history of your mother. I want them to investigate and find out that their mother is Padme and find out more about the history of everything that went down during the prequel trilogy.
Well, you know, if we don't ever get it in canon, any fanfic writers who are listening, get going on that. I know.
I'll write a fanfic where Luke and Leia go to an elderly Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, God, you totally would, too.
I would.
I started to say I was going to write it, but I would not include Jar Jar Binks. So
I knew that she'd mentioned this in the book, so I just found it. She does talk a little bit about that she'd done what research she could, but this was after she'd learned her mother's identity. So, yeah, it is very much just like, oh, how did she learn it? What kind of research did she do?
Considering how terrible the two of them were at hiding the fact that they were married.
Oh my God, they're so terrible.
You just have all these people just telling their stories like, oh, those two.
Yeah, they probably just had to Luke, I'm sure it was Luke, went to go do research about Anakin Skywalker and probably saw the same name coming up over and over and over again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a moment in the Princess Leia comic because they end up on Naboo and she sees a picture of Amidala, and there's actually it's like a painting or something, and the painting seems to look at Leia.
Yeah, Leia has a Force vision basically.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. I want to talk about how this fits in with episode 7, because part of it coming out was like, oh, this is going to give all kinds of hints and clues about episode 7.
And it just raised lots of questions.
It did. I mean, really, all it did was it smashed existing fanon to bits.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it further solidified the idea that the mystery box is what happened to make Ben Solo fall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it really firmly established that that's the real question and not really anything about Rey's parentage. I mean, that's a huge question still, but I think that the mystery box is what happened with Luke and Ben. Yeah, so let's talk about the biggest thing that it smashed in fanon.
There was no Padawan massacre.
Yes.
Yeah. And also that Ben was still Ben when he was, like, what, 21?
Yeah.
I think 23. I think
23?
Okay. I think it's officially Bloodline is 6 years, according to the Star Wars website.
Yeah.
It's 6 years before TFA.
Because
I just suck at math.
Yeah, I did the math based on Casterfo because he's 32. And then he said that Endor happened when he was
six, I think.
Oh, we have to talk about him later, too, for sure.
Oh, yes, definitely.
That's definitely in the spoilery section.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, Ben was an adult when he turned.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting conversation because a lot of people have said, oh, you know, this destroys a lot of ideas about, you know, his autonomy and his sense of agency. And I'm like, I think it, like, actually makes the story a lot more compelling.
Yeah.
I think that this was an actual adult. You know, we don't know what kind of an adult he was, and we have to remember that we're viewing him, even the few times he's mentioned in the book, through his mother's eyes.
Well, I mean, it seemed to me with the fanon that was going around, they always had this, you know, massacre at the Jedi Academy that sounded more like a school shooting than anything that would actually happen in Star Wars.
People kind of, they very much latched onto him as an allegory for a school shooter, I think.
Yeah. Which I feel like Bloodline pretty much killed.
Yeah.
Because it seems very much like there's not an academy at all.
No.
Luke may have some other students. They're referred to as acolytes, though, which is a kind of much different connotation than student.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got the impression, just from what I was reading, that, like, Luke and Ben were, like, traveling by themselves, just kind of hopping around. And that's why a lot of angst comes from Leia not hearing anything from Luke and Ben. And I think that's because they're going all around the galaxy. And based on what Luke was supposedly doing during The Force Awakens, it wouldn't surprise me if at the time he's training Ben, he's also trying to dig up all of the stuff about the Jedi. So
right.
Yeah, that's, I think, and that's where Laura Santeca comes in as well. And there's a little bit more about him in the Poe Dameron book, that he was helping Luke, you know, discover more lore.
There's the whole business about the Church of the Force. And we don't know yet how that's going to fit in. But and the other thing that caught me kind of off guard, it felt like watching The Force Awakens that Leia and Han had been estranged for a lot longer than they apparently
were. Yes. Like the and I understand, you know, that they didn't live together very often, but the actual estrangement did seem like it was much longer, which kind of, I think, led to the idea, like, helped reinforce the idea that people had that Ben was, like, you know, 15 or so years old whenever he turned.
Based on this, I mean, this completely changed the way I viewed The Force Awakens, and it's like, okay, based on this, Han and Leia are still married in The Force Awakens, and, you know,
and,
it's...
And obviously very happy with each other. I mean, we'll get into specifics
in
other section, but, I mean, they were apart, and they were sad that their lives were keeping them apart, but their relationship was strong.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that they understood how much their relationship worked the way it was, which I think is really cool to, you know, represent a sort of non-traditional relationship like that.
Like, those two were going to have a traditional relationship anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Should we get into spoilery stuff?
Yeah.
I'm tired of holding back.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think we can probably go into spoilery stuff.
So if you're trying to avoid spoilers, now's the time to skip ahead. The timestamp for the next segment will be in the show notes, so you can skip right ahead to that. Or if you just want to stop listening to us, you could do that, but I don't know why you would. I mean, honestly. So the plot itself, I was actually surprised just from reading the synopsis. I thought the plot would be much more focused on the Vader revelation than it actually was.
But there was so much else that I like, this book is relatively short for everything that happened. And I have to say thank you, Claudia Gray, for making these politics compelling, because they really were.
Oh my god!
Yeah, George Lucas, take note.
Yeah, because she really did make it compelling.
Intergalactic politics can be written compellingly,
and this really was.
Yeah. The Vader revelation, I think, doesn't come out until like over halfway through the book.
I checked last night when I was rereading, and it's like 60-70% of the way through the book, according to my Kindle.
Yeah.
So it's late. And it really comes in as a complication to the plot that's already going on.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the main plot is really about Leia investigating this new cartel that's rising to take the place of the Hutts.
And finding out about the First Order.
I actually disagree. I think the main plot is Leia's friendship with Castorfo.
Well, I mean, they're tied together.
But I think that is the plot that actually runs through all of the other plots. And
so that brings up to me, and I think Lisa and I have talked about this a little bit, do you think that Castorfo actually got executed?
No.
I hope not. Because I really liked him by the end of it.
I think if he was executed, that is the waste of a fantastic character.
Yes.
And
a fantastic relationship, too.
Yes. And plus, I mean, I love Han. I do love
Han. I ship it hard.
But he's dead, and Leia needs a pretty 30-something to spend some time with.
Yes.
I really hope that Castor Fo pops up somewhere. I don't care if it's in a comic book, and we find out how, like, there's this daring rescue, and they rescue him.
I want the daring rescue.
Yes. Like, a separate book. Like, just, even if it's just a backstory thing in the next movie, and we suddenly have Castor Fo is here, and we, you know, I don't know, just something.
Leia does have a line when she's talking to Castor Fo for the last time, where she's like, if she had a blaster, that she'd take out all the guards and save him. And then immediately after that, she's forming the Resistance. So it's like, that's the first thing the Resistance did.
Oh my god, yes.
Okay, headcanon accepted.
Yeah.
Actually, that was one of the best lines of the book, I think. And it tied together so much. When Castor Fo is about to be taken off planet to his home planet to probably be executed. And she has this great moment where she's like, she realized then something she had never fully understood before. She'd always wondered what had led her father to the dark side to become Darth Vader. She'd imagined it came from ambition, greed, or some other venal weakness. Never had she considered that the turn might begin in a better place, out of the desire to save someone or to avenge a great wrong. Even if it led to evil, that first impulse might be born of loyalty, a sense of justice, or even love. And just that she made that connection and got it, that she was so angry that this was happening, that she realized, oh,
Leia
crap.
Realized her father's a dark Hufflepuff.
Do you think that might tie into how she why she still has so much faith in her son?
That, yeah, I can actually see that.
Because, I mean, and I do see, like, I've always held the idea anyway that it's not a mother's blind spot in this case. I think that she, through her connection to the Force, actually does know that he's not completely dark.
And I mean, every time in the trilogy we hear someone say, there's still good in him, I know there is, they've been right.
That was the first time that Leia really thinks of him as Anakin Skywalker. Yeah. She's always thinking about him as Vader throughout the book. And there is a point where she's talking about how Luke discusses their father and how he always smiles, you know, talking about how he redeemed himself at the end. And Leia could never feel any of that. She was glad that Luke was happy, but she couldn't accept that. And basically that moment at the end is Leia accepting it. And it's Leia accepting that she's got that inside of her too. One thing I did notice, and probably one of the reasons why I would like a story about Leia and Padme, is that Leia very much identifies with her father's. There's very little talk about, I think Queen Brea is only mentioned in passing. Like,
That was probably my only real disappointment, that she didn't play more of a role.
Yeah. But I think in Star Wars history, Leia has always been more of a, you know, pardon the expression, a daddy's girl, because, because Bail had been a senator.
Oh, the irony.
Bail was a senator while Brea was queen of Alderaan. And certainly Leia did follow in her father's footsteps. Rather than, after her mother died, becoming queen of Alderaan, she instead became a senator. So they did carry that connection through into this book, where she's always saying that, you know, Bail is her father, not Vader. But in the end, she does recognize that there is something of Vader in her, which is probably why, you know, when Han says there's too much of Vader in him about Ben, Leia says, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, he can't be redeemed.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just, this is kind of a, you know, 180, but I just, when you brought up the royalty thing, I have to talk about Lady Carice. Is it Carice or Cerise? Do we know if how it's pronounced?
I've been saying Carice in my head.
Yeah,
so
same here.
We'll go with that.
Okay, yeah. Like, okay, I'm that person who, like, I see a show, I read a book, see a movie, whatever, and that mean girl character, I am just like, who are you? I love you so much. Like, you know, and it's not so much that I think that what they're doing is right or whatever. I'm just fascinated by those characters. So when I kind of started to realize what she was, I was just like, oh my God. Like, this is an amazing character. Like, I was so glad that really, you know, the two antagonists in this were both women. And
yeah.
They were so different from each other, too.
Okay, can we talk about the fact of how many women there are in this?
Yes.
And how they are all amazing?
Yes.
Oh, God. They're all amazing, and they're all different.
Very different from each other.
Yeah.
Like, Greer, oh my gosh.
Greer is Sonal, who is Leia's, assistant and right hand and...
Former pilot. Well, pilot, but yeah. She is incredible, and so there's just so much depth to her, and, you know, there's this bit of mystery, and, you know, there was a hardness to her that was not, like, really off-putting. Like, she was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, little Corey Sella.
Oh.
Like, that made me so bad, because I'm like, oh, she was, like, just this incredible presence, and then, but you know, the whole time you're reading it, how she dies, and you're like...
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know this, the scene in The Force Awakens where Hosnian Prime gets destroyed, the close-up of the woman watching the blast coming toward the planet, that's Corsella.
And she was sent by Leia to Hosnian Prime, pretty much to, you know, make a last-ditch effort to say, hey, the First Order, they're serious, they're huge, please pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. And, like, there was a scene, the scene was cut from the movie, I think, because it...
But I think it's in the novelization.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I think they cut it because they wanted to save Leia's introduction until when she and Han see each other.
Yeah.
And they mention how in the book several times that she's 16, so you think that in The Force Awakens she's only, you know, 21, 22.
Oh my God. It just got worse.
But in a way I was also like, okay, this is cool. This character that ended up having a small role anyway, and then most her role getting cut to where she's not even really named in the movie, you know, us learning more about her was fantastic, but it was also so bittersweet.
It was heartbreaking. Yeah.
I did think there was a lot of attention focused on ages.
Yeah.
Leia, you know, thinking about when she sees the holovid of her killing Jabba, and she's talking about how it had been a long time since she had felt that, you know, untouchable.
Yeah.
And just how stupid they were, like, doing all of the stuff that they had done when they were kids. Mm-hmm. And Castor Foe, who's 32, and she says, you know, at one time she would have thought that was very mature.
He was just a baby.
Yeah. And Carice is about his age, but seems younger, but that, we know, is just her facade.
Yeah.
Very brilliant one that many women have, you know, employed throughout the years, pretending to be a frivolous ditz. Meanwhile, you know, plotting to take over the galaxy.
But, you know, the thing was, I think she was a frivolous ditz, but she was also plotting to take over the galaxy. I mean, she was really invested in how noble she was.
But I think it does mention she definitely does play it up in order to, so that people will underestimate her.
I think that was interesting how we saw these characters introduced versus how they shook out. Because honestly, I freaking hated Castor Foe at first.
Yeah.
Hated.
That was really, like, because that was the sort of thing that they do on television shows so often, where there's this character that you hate in, like, the first season, and by the end of the series, you are crying over them. And, yeah, I thought that was brilliant. I also thought it was kind of interesting with Carice that Leia does actually, just like everybody else, underestimate her. Mm-hmm. And that leads to Leia being vulnerable to her.
I think with Castor Foe's introduction, and the thing that made everybody hate him was super brilliant, because it really established his... what we thought was his character, but it also kind of explained something from The Force Awakens, and that he's introduced with all of this Imperial memorabilia.
Yes.
And so it's like, okay.
He's like an Empire fan.
Yeah, it reminded me of, you, like, you walk into a guy's office and he's got Nazi paraphernalia all over his, like, that's what, to me, it would have felt like for Leia.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. But then it also helps explain for The Force Awakens, where it's like, okay, so this is how Ben Solo got Vader's helmet.
Yeah.
Though it does make me wonder if, like, it's a legit helmet or if it's, like, some bootleg.
Well, I mean, we know from not just this, but also from Aftermath, that there is a black market for Empire memorabilia.
Yeah.
And there's a theory out there that Kyber Crystal is actually Vader's.
Was Vader's.
Right. Which is why it's cracked, because otherwise it's like, why would he keep a saber with this cracked
crystal? Why would he keep a broken one? Yeah.
Crystal.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah. Wow, I hadn't heard that before, and now that's my headcanon. Right.
Well, and also, there is a scene in Aftermath, and this isn't plot spoilery, it's just one of the little interludes that crops up. There is a scene in Aftermath where someone is offering to sell Darth Vader's lightsaber to one of these Empire groupies.
And when does Aftermath take place?
It's like right after Jedi.
Oh, okay. Wow.
It's like, it's really early on. God, I think one of the first times, I mean, I had a lot of moments of like, oh my God, yay. I mean, I really did. My heart just kind of constricted every time Leia would remember something that had happened in the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. And just, it was so obvious how much, you know, she loved her family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking back nostalgically about how they had all met each other and, you know, that Luke had saved her and then Han had saved her and then they all saved each other and it was wonderful. And, you know, that just got me. But the one moment when I think I did post on Tumblr, I had to like stop and put the book down because I was losing my mind, was when Carice was the one who found the music box.
Yes.
That movie. Oh, God,
it was the worst person.
I know. I was like, oh my God. The
worst person to find that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think one of my favorite lines in the book was when Leia says that she doesn't want to remember anything from the past, anything that happened during the rebellion, except Han running through Hoth, trying to rescue her.
Yes.
When Leia recalls being tortured.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Because of the part where she talks about how the two stormtroopers just stood there and watched. And she was like, how could anybody do that? And so I made the connection then. I was like, how much must she admire and adore Finn?
Yes.
Because Finn did, you know, he broke out of that sort of training.
Yeah.
And, you know, did the right thing. And she just like, I think would mean so much to her considering what she went through. Yeah. But then also then the flip side of that is also, you know, knowing that her son tortures people.
That moment meant so much because in the movie, it's so bloodless because Leia, you know, just looks scared and then the door goes down and you don't know what happens. Yeah. And there was a lot of, you know, speculation that it's just Darth Vader trying to use his force powers and it's like, oh, I'm going to get the memories out of you or whatever. But no, it actually, they physically hurt her.
Yeah. I mean, we get a hint of that with the torture droid kind of floating toward her. And you see the needle and everything.
But we don't know anything about torture droids so much at that point either, you know?
Yeah, but it's visceral in the way Leia's describing it.
Yeah, writhing on the floor, screaming in agony. Like, yeah, that's... I had to actually pause and really take a deep breath before I could move on after that passage right there.
And so much of the horror being in her recognizing, you know, that this was her dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, and you brought up... Okay, so you brought up the thing about with Han running through the hallways on Hoth. That made me think about the moment, another moment where I did tear up was whenever Han rescues her at the end.
Oh my God, that was the best moment. That was like the most Star Wars-y moment ever.
It was so thrilling. I was just like, who is this in this ship? It can't be. It can't be. And then I'm like, oh my God, it is.
And the casual conversation, and they're just so fucking married.
I know. He's just like, hey, sorry I'm late. Yep. Like, oh my God, that's such a Leia and Han thing.
Yeah. I loved that so much. And it made me, I mean, it was another thing that was bittersweet because I was just like, look, he rescued her and now he's dead.
That brings up the other point, the flashback to when Ben's a baby.
It was a really short flashback.
It's a really short flashback, but it was really effective Han talking about he doesn't think he'll ever be old enough to be a grandparent. Yeah. Oh, God.
Like, how much, like, there's just so much in it that, like, I can't imagine, like, if you read this book not knowing anything about The Force Awakens, like, how different an experience it would be for you to read it. Because there's so much that draws on, like, your emotional response has to do with the fact that you know what happens in the future. And I thought that was pretty brilliant.
Well, that's really a really fan fiction-y kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do love that because just those little things like, you know, Han talking about, you know, everybody sort of has that idea. I'm never going to be old enough to be a grandparent. But, you know, we know that Han, while he's
actually
old enough,
doesn't.
Never does, you know, get to experience that. And yeah.
Okay, who was super surprised that at the end of the book there wasn't, you know, some sort of announcement that, like, Luke sending, like, a message to Leia about something's happened to Ben. Like, I was waiting, like, the entire book for something to come out.
Yeah, I think a little, but not because it was, like, the way, like, that little bit of plotline was peppered throughout, just but in small doses, made me kind of think it was never going to really come to play. Like, I thought maybe we would know for sure whether he got her message, but I was not, because I figure anything about all of that is going to come in episode 8 or...
Yeah.
Yeah. When I first started reading the book, like I said, being the Luke fangirl that I am, I was watching for him to show up.
Yeah.
You know, I was really kind of hoping, like, maybe he'll show up, maybe he'll show up. But as the book went on, because it was so compelling and because it was so Leia focused, I ended up being really glad that he didn't.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt the same way about any revelation about Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if Luke had showed up, he wouldn't have said anything.
Well, shut up. But I mean, Ben or Luke showing up in this book really would have kind of sucked the air out of the room.
Yeah.
I mean, because that would have been, like, the focus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of why he's only in the last few minutes of The Force Awakens as well, right?
They've actually said that, yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Leia's relationship with the Force? Because I think it's pretty fascinating.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Because it's like she's almost still not a believer, even though it's so obvious, like, at every turn that she uses the Force. Like,
I think she knows that she does. I mean, she talks a lot about her intuition, and there's that recognition of what that intuition actually is.
Yeah, and then
she's really kind of not looking at it directly.
Yeah, I remember a moment where she thinks about how she's always had a good sense of direction, you know. And then when she's on the like, even she comes into play when she's like with her blaster skills when she and Castorfo are escaping.
There's one scene in the underwater Sebensko where she's in the underwater planet.
Yeah.
And it says, like, there's one shot and it's a shot that, like, one in a thousand could make, and she totally makes it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she straight up pulls a mind trick. Like, she says that she's just turning on her motherly charm, but she straight up pulls a mind trick with those guards. Like, that's all there is to it.
It doesn't work that well, but...
Yeah. I mean, it works at first, but yeah.
I've always had the theory that Leia was actually stronger in the Force than Luke. It's just she doesn't pursue it the same way he does. It's all latent.
Well, doesn't she acknowledge, like, when she's having that conversation that it wouldn't be a good idea for people to know that a senator was as force sensitive as she is because of the ability to influence, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and some of this might be my headcanon spilling over, but I feel like it's really borne out in what we see, especially in Bloodline. I think there's a part of her that is afraid of that.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes, definitely.
Knowing who her father was and knowing how angry she is as a character... Yeah. I think she really is afraid to build on that power for fear of what she might become.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of meta on Tumblr and other places lately about how Leia very much reflects Anakin Skywalker's temperament.
Well, oh, God, yeah.
Luke is much more like Padme.
Yes.
So, and I mean, that's, I think, part of the reason why Luke is able to pull Vader over from the dark side and why Leia shies away from using her force powers, because she has the presence of mind to know that she could fall to the dark side if she were to give in to using these powers.
Yeah. Oh, God, we haven't talked about Hutt Slayer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay, first of all, I don't know if Claudia Gray for sure is a fangirl in her non-writing life, but I think she is, and how much do I love her for taking that bit of fanon and making it canon.
Oh my God. Yeah. I screamed. I was just like, no. Yeah, that was amazing.
That was the best thing. I'm so glad that it's canon now. I'm so happy. Yeah.
So for those of you who didn't mind the spoilers and haven't read it, the underworld refers to Leia as Hutt Slayer, like, at least the people that, you know, hate the Hutts. And
it was the Nyctos,
yes. Was it just the Nyctos? Yeah, it was the Nyctos, like, cartels and everything referred to her as Hutt Slayer. And Riven, like, that's how he, and Riven, like, that's how he, like, throughout the novel refers to her. Like, even, I think, to the end, he still calls her Hutt Slayer. Yeah.
Well, and his prized possession is a holocube recording of her killing Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah, and he says that Hutt Slayer is a title that actually means something because she earned it. Meanwhile, Senator and Princess, you know, are just words that people throw out.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
And I mean, that also ties to Leia's anger, because when she's watching the death of Jabba, she remembers how angry she was at the time and how good it felt for her to actually do that because of what he did to her.
Yeah. Well, and the novelization in Return of the Jedi definitely makes it plain that she was using the Force.
Yeah.
To do that. Like, it was augmenting her strength. So, you know, I was thinking, we talked a little bit about the female characters and how they're all fantastic. And I was sitting here thinking, realizing there's really only like three, you know, not counting one of the villains, Rin Rivendi, who shows up a little. But like, there's really only three male characters that show up. And that's Castrofo and Tylin and...
Yeah.
And we haven't talked about Joff. We have to talk about Joff because I love him.
Joff Seastriker. Like, can we talk about that name?
Okay, here's the one parallel. I am so shocked because you couldn't look at this character the way he's described, the way he acts, what his freaking name is, and not go, like, oh my God, it's Luke.
I know.
Why doesn't Leia ever make that connection? I don't understand.
I'm wondering if Joff is still around in the Resistance, because...
I hope so. I want to meet him.
Like, I think the whole thing with Greer and her illness, I don't know if we're supposed to assume that she's no longer alive by the time of TFA, because, you know, you'd think that she would be still at Leia's right hand.
They did kind of... There was an implication.
Yeah.
There was an implication that if she joined the Resistance, the stress of it would...
Would kill her, yeah.
Would kill her. Which really sucks. But but honestly, though, the fact that Claudia Gray gave us this character who is chronically ill and who is still fighting for whatever life she can get.
Yeah.
I really, you know, as someone who has dealt with some chronic illness, I thought that was amazing. So, I mean, we don't get to see that.
Yeah. We haven't talked any about Hadrosian at all.
Oh, you mean like the other main villain?
Yeah, the other main villain. One thing that I was actually disappointed that she killed herself. Like, I know that, like, the way that where everything ended up, like, that was pretty much the only solution, maybe.
Yeah.
But I was just like, oh no, because, like, she was fascinating, just like the others. Like, you know, I may have, like, hated her, but she was fascinating. And I was just like, oh, she's gone. Okay, great.
So basically what we have here in this book, and I'm willing to bet this has never happened in any Star Wars book, we have the protagonist and the two antagonists, all female, and two of them are well over 40.
Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly think the closest we got on that was probably Courtship of Princess Leia. And that is not the best example.
No, it's not. And so I love that. I love that we're getting not just a lot of women, but women of all ages. And of course, there was Dr. Colonia, too.
Yeah, she got a first name.
Yeah, Harder Colonia. And we, you know, we saw her with her great scene in The Force Awakens, and now we get a little more of her. And so we've got another great kick-ass older lady running around.
Yeah. And then Greer Sonnel is a woman of color, and so is Corsella.
And so is Carice, actually.
It's like, well, I think it just describes her eyes are dark brown, is like, but, you know, Claudia definitely headcanons her as an Asian woman, so.
Yeah, we'll link to the, to her fan casts, so you can see, which I think is hilarious because she has Tom Hiddleston cast as Castrofo.
You know, it's funny because I was picturing more of like a slightly more narrow faced and taller Bradley Cooper was sort of like in my head because of that shit eating grin. But Tom Hiddleston has that same shit eating grin.
Yeah.
So,
but then we had Tom Hiddleston and Carrie Fisher showing up at the White House Correspondents Dinner together. Which
just
made me so happy.
That was amazing.
Speaking as a white woman, I totally got from the descriptions of them in the book that they were supposed to be characters of color.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I which I applaud Claudia Gray for actually like putting effort into it and not describing anybody's skin color in terms of food.
Right.
Well,
she was so like she was pretty explicit with people, and that was great to see. And it wasn't just like, oh, we're going to, like, I don't know. It's like, because I think she also took care, like, because a lot of times people will default to white, and so authors will only describe the characters of color, as being sort of different. Mm-hmm. And I think she did make sure, because we knew that Joff was basically a little Luke clone. Yeah. You know.
And by the way, she has him cast as
Josh Hutcherson.
Yeah, right? Josh Hutcherson.
There was some random stuff thrown in, like, you know, when the pilots are joshing with each other, one of the pilots is obviously gay. And it's just sort of thrown in there. And then Leia mentioned something about, you know, people of at least four genders, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I mean, Claudia Gray she's great. She's done that before. She, you know, she makes reference to that sort of thing in Lost Stars as well.
Yeah.
You know, just casual, this is a thing that happens in the universe, which is perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I got through rereading it is just how sad Leia's life is. Because everybody's talked about how, obviously, she and Han were together for a long time before, you know, Ben fell and they had a happy life. But Leia's, you know, life in the political arena, and she talks about it multiple times, just how frustrating it is and how it's been frustrating basically since the rebellion ended. And I think this book really makes clear that Leia is a warrior. And this is one of the big complaints with New Republic versus the Resistance, that they do think that Leia is a warmonger, and this book kind of points out that they have a point, that, you know, Leia is a person of action, and just seeing the political landscape and how Leia is so worried that the government is going to fall back into the problems of the Old Republic turning into the Empire. And she's got a really good point. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that it's obvious that the government system doesn't work. It's something that I've always found strange about these, like, space stories, where basically you have, like, one representative for an entire planet and, like, this galaxy-wide Senate. And they're supposed to, you know, make the decisions for the entire galaxy. And then I'm like, okay, so in our real world, a country can't has a lot of trouble functioning if they only have one representative.
Yeah.
So, of course, these governments continue fail.
All the planets are, like, you know, have only one geological, like, meteorological system happening. So, but
yeah, that is true.
One thing that whenever I reread it that stuck out to me in chapter 3, it's almost like, it's just so ironic reading it again when you know what happens. She's thinking, and she thinks the journey to Bastala would be the perfect way to end her career in the Senate, doing something interesting and meaningful again at last. Then she could walk out with a sense of satisfaction that at least she'd been able to accomplish some real tangible good before she left. I'm like, well, it's one of those things where it's like, things don't always happen as we plan. But, I mean, she did, considering she destroyed an entire base full of soldiers and equipment.
Right. I mean, she probably slowed down the First Order least, by at least a couple of years.
Yeah. But I just, that struck me when I was rereading it. I was just like, oh my God, Leia, you have no idea like what this trip is going to like unfold into.
I mean, that's something we haven't really talked about, is just how new the First Order actually is. It's only been around for 6 years.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like they were forming slowly, but I had gotten the impression that it had been around for longer.
But, well, it seems like it would have been, like it had to have had its roots way further back, because the Stormtroopers are adults.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could have been something like the Empire just went and licked its wounds, and that's where sort of these threads came along. Yeah, somebody had to have been training Stormtroopers at least 25 years prior.
It's 23-ish. I bet we know who that was.
Brendel Hux?
Brendel Hux. The book, we were talking about this before we started the call. The book mentions specifically that Brendel Hux has vanished. Carice, you know, wonders what happened to him after the Battle of Jakku. So, I mean, that's got to be something there. And in canon, that's what he did. He ran one of the Imperial Academies.
Chewbacca, did we want to? I mean, he's not mentioned a whole lot, but it is interesting that we learned that he has, at some point, gone back home to be with his family.
Yeah, he is not with Han throughout the course of the book. He's back home. Yeah.
That raises some very interesting questions, because we don't know what the canonicity of the life debt is anymore.
Right.
Because for the longest time, the story was Han saved Chewbacca's life, and so that's why Chewbacca follows him around, and that Chewbacca actually had a family at home, and I'm sure at some point we'll talk about the Star Wars holiday special.
I think we have that set. We're going to talk about that around Christmas time.
Yeah. But his family had always understood that because of a Wookiee life, that means, you know, staying with somebody their entire lives.
Well, and didn't it also extend to his children?
It also extended to the family, yeah.
Which was my theory on why he didn't actually kill Kylo Ren.
Yeah, it does seem like Chewbacca only comes back to be with Han, I'm going to guess, after everything goes down with Ben. And I've got the personal theory that he does that to stop Han from being self-destructive. Because obviously what Han is doing in this is very different than what we see him doing in The Force Awakens. Yeah. This, he's got a steady job. He's mentoring kids. He and Leia have a close relationship. But after everything goes down, he goes back to his old ways. He's smuggling.
And I almost...
Yes. I almost feel like he and Leia are kind of in cahoots trying to keep Han alive.
It could be, yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of focus on age. And a lot of... taking Star Wars out of the realm of the fantastic and, I think, grounding it. Like, Castorfo, when he's talking to Leia, and he pulls the clerk's argument about the rebels being terrorists and, you know, killing a bunch of contractors on the Death Star.
Yeah. I thought that was, like, sort of a... That kind of brought it into the real world when we talk about, like, collateral damage and...
Yeah, and I really feel like, especially with the original Star Wars trilogy, it's all, you know, these large archetypes and a mythological story. And I think part of the problem that people had with the prequels was that they do get into a lot of political stuff. And so it's not quite as fantastic. It's, you know, I mean, granted, there were a lot more problems with it than that. But in this book, you do see there's political stuff. These characters, they're no longer myths. They're actual people. And you see Leia doing the day-to-day thing. And
we learned, like, what her favorite foods are, which I thought was fun. So, yeah, any last thoughts about Bloodline other than everyone needs to go read it?
No, I think everybody just needs to go read it.
Yeah, no, I think that's the most important thing is, you know, go read it, enjoy it. Really experience, you know, Princess Leia. This is the Princess Leia story.
Yeah, and we were long overdue for one too.
Oh God, yes.
All right. I'd like to thank MC and April for talking about Leia. We have a lot more stuff planned in future months, so I'm sure you'll hear from all of us again soon. So thanks. Bye.
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 This is Roan, and in keeping with our Leia theme, I have two fics to recommend today. The first one is Leia post The Force Awakens, with flashbacks to the time before, and the second one is a longer look at Leia's life from the period immediately after Return of the Jedi up through when Ben joins Luke for training. The first fic is called Song for a Fifth Child by Deputy Chairman. This fic is so gorgeously written and heartbreaking. It follows Leia from Han's death, back to a time when Ben was a child, and onto her role with the Resistance, particularly how she winds up playing mother to some of her troops, especially Poe as he comes to terms with his torture at the hands of Leia's son. I love Leia's relationships with everyone in this, but it's her scenes with Poe that are especially moving, like this one. When she turns back to Poe, he's rubbing his eyes. Leia sits down beside him. She squeezes his hand, and he looks at her and blinks very fast. "Poe," she says softly. "I'm sorry to have to do this, but I need to know what he did. I need to know what he's capable of. And oh, forget everything she ever said to Han Solo about their child. These are the cruelest words that have ever come out of her mouth. I need to know what he's capable of. they are the cruelest words in the universe, and she can never say them to Han now because everybody knows what Ben did to him. Poe nods and doesn't answer. I heard your tactical report of the encounter, and it was invaluable, Leia presses. But you're my right-hand man, Poe. I need you to be here, not lost in this. You need to tell me what happened to you now. Yeah, he says. His other hand is clenched in a fist so tight his knuckles are white. She doesn't rush him. In less than 6,000 words, we see Leia as a leader, a diplomat, a mother, a wife, and a friend. And we see her at her best and at her worst. Go check this out. It's well worth a read. The next fic is Bethagen's All the Right Reasons. Bethagen is one of my favorite genfic writers, and this fic is one of the reasons why. This is the story of Leia, Han, and baby Ben, and the how and why of Luke first not training and then finally training Ben. It's a fantastic look at them as a family unit, the ways they fit, the ways they're broken, and how they fracture. My favorite parts are how the three adults interact with Ben. I'm a sucker for good kid fic. But there's also this, where Luke is continually dodging the responsibility of training Ben. He stood, shifting Ben to his hip, and walked with him to the high-res monitor that showed the planet's surface above these underground rooms. It was almost dark, the sky deep indigo and the trees black against it. Three bright stars made a triangle high on the left. The view was a luxury given to a princess and a war hero. Luke had been offered officer's quarters, but he chose to live in barracks, where without a chrono, time of day was anyone's guess. See those, Ben? Those top ones are planets. That one on the bottom is another sun, with its own set of planets around it. You can't see them, but they're there. Someday I'll show you, he added, voice a whisper against Ben's hair. Leia waited for Luke to continue. She had no problem giving orders as a leader in the Alliance, but she'd also learned what quiet could do. It could get to the root of things so much faster when she let the other person fill in the silence. She'd watched Luke do it to other people, a skill he'd picked up during his time away on Dagobah. She'd seen him refuse to fall for it in the presence of diplomats and others who used words as weapons. But when it was just the two of them, it never failed to work. I didn't finish the training, Luke said. Leia knew. So did Han, who called it the minute they were off Tatooine, before he was even recovered from the carbonite. It didn't matter, though. To Leia, her brother was a Jedi, no matter what some ancient rulebook said. You learned so much before Yoda died. Yes, Luke said. He held up his right hand, Ben still snug against his left hip. And look what happened. You went back, Leia reminded him. Luke shook his head. It was too late. I'm a good pilot, Leia. I have an extra edge. He shrugged, shifting the baby to a better position as he did. I know it's useful to let people think there's something more. It's more than useful, Leia snapped, losing patience with her twin's damned modesty. I've seen the change in you. I've seen what you can do. Why won't you... But he was doing that thing he'd learned, that gathering of palpable calm around himself, and there was no point going on. She'd never get through now. Ultimately, Luke tells Han why he can't train Ben, and the reason surprised me, but also made complete sense. Leia is the one who brings Luke around, of course, and for better or worse, Luke takes Ben on. At 10,000 words, this fic packs a wallop and is one of my favorite Leia fics. I'm a 90s bitch. I love it. I love it. Well, that's it for our first episode. We hope you enjoyed our discussions. We certainly did, to judge by how much time we went over.
Over the month, we'll put up outtakes on our YouTube channel.
Yeah. We have a YouTube channel now, by the way. There'll be a link to that in the show notes. That's new, and the link is ungodly illegible, so it's just better if you click on it than if I read it. In particular, we had a really pretty lengthy discussion about Kylo Ren, which was fascinating but didn't quite fit, so...
Unfortunately, we're all a little bit of Kylo Ren trash, so...
Yeah, just a little bit, yeah. Just a little bit.
Those Skywalkers, we're a sucker for them even when they're called Solo.
Even when they're evil, apparently.
For some people, it's especially when they're evil.
So, next month, we've got probably an even bigger roundtable planned.
Yeah, next month we are going to be doing the Eras of Fandom from the beginning all the way up to The Force Awakens. We'll be covering Legends and the Clone Wars and the prequels. Just a good discussion about how fandom has changed over the years.
And kind of how we all got into it at various points. So look for that.
It's July 5th.
I guess all that's left for us to do really is to thank April, who did a great job with us on the roundtable on Bloodline.
Yes, we love April, and we're hoping to have her back many times.
Yes, very soon. I also want to thank the Three Patch Podcast, which, if you're not familiar with them, they are a Sherlock-themed podcast that is along the lines of this one, but much, much bigger and much older. I used to work with them, and they've kind of been my inspiration for how we're getting this set up. So if you like this podcast and you like Sherlock, you should definitely check out the Three Patch Podcast. They're at 3-patch.com.
And if you like us, you know, let us know how we did. You can drop us a line on Tumblr at trashcompactorpodcast.tumblr.com. You can contact us on Twitter at SW Trash Podcast, or at our website, trashcompactorpodcast.com, or you can contact us through email at thetrashcompactorpodcast@gmail.com.
And that's all we've got for this month. Bye.
Bye.